You're listening to Spotlight Aïcha, a podcast that shines a light on ideas that matter. Bienvenue à notre podcast, ou comme on dit au Canada, notre balado. I'm Larry Markowitz. Welcome to Spotlight Aïcha, the podcast series presented by Aïcha, the International Association of Young Lawyers. Over the course of season four, we'll explore the academic programs of major upcoming Aïcha events. We'll also speak about diversity and inclusion, human rights, and sustainability topics related to the legal profession. To kick things off, today we'll focus on the theme of the November half-year conference, which is In Times of Polycrisis, Preparing for a Better Future Through Resilience and Sport Values. Aïcha members will gather in Paris from November 29th to December 2nd. And as Audrey Hepburn once said, Paris is always a good idea. The world is facing an era of unprecedented challenges and uncertainties characterized by what has been termed a polycrisis. This multiplicity of crises has forced us to rethink our core principles and strategies to address issues such as pandemics, climate change, economic instability, and social inequalities. To tackle these complex challenges, we need innovative approaches that promote resilience and enduring values. Here, the values of sportsmanship become crucial. Sports, with their universal appeal and their ability to inspire, have traditionally fostered personal growth, community cohesion, and societal change. The values within sports like teamwork, discipline, perseverance, respect, and fair play shape not only elite athletes, but also transform individuals and communities during difficult times. As we confront these multiple crises, the organizers of the Aïcha Paris Half-Year Conference have aimed to inspire us to harness the power of sports and resilience in navigating these turbulent times, paving the way for a brighter and more sustainable future. To learn more about this topic, I'm pleased to welcome the academic coordinators of Aïcha's upcoming Paris Half-Year Conference. From Brussels, Belgium, we're joined by Michel Sehers. And from Copenhagen, Denmark, we're joined by Timothée Giard, who is normally based in Paris. Now, Michel, you're a partner at MVVP in Brussels, where you practice commercial law with a focus on the distribution sector. You advise clients in a wide range of industries to start up e-commerce, retail, and distribution activities. In addition, you occasionally serve as an arbitrator in commercial litigation matters.
That's absolutely it, and connected with the team that clients in retail have faced turmoil and were needed to be resilient in the past years with e-commerce and COVID. We had quite a lot of interesting work here in the firm.
So you've lived the polycrisis setting, shall we say?
Before that, the word was spread, yes.
And Timothée, you're a partner at Gate Avocat in Paris and a member of the Paris and Madrid bars. Your practice focuses on European and French competition law, as well as online distribution, platform regulation, and foreign direct investment. And since 2015, you've taught competition law at Sciences Po. Of special note, I noticed, Timothée, you have an LLM from my alma mater, McGill University, right here in Montreal.
That's absolutely right. And I still have a very strong and deep connection with Canada and Quebec. Yes.
That's wonderful. I was actually at the faculty just last week. So it's
Really?
I maintain my connection as well. Before we address the topic at hand, let's begin with some basics. Timothée, I've always thought I had a mastery of the English language. It's my mother tongue. But I'm not sure I've ever heard the word polycrisis. What exactly is a polycrisis?
Well, I think, Larry, it's a very valid question. I think we need to understand and realize that we come from an era where we used to manage one crisis at a time, be it the Euro crisis in 2010, the migration crisis in 2015, or, the terrorist attacks in Europe. And now we're moving to a world where it feels like the number and intensity of all crises have accelerated sharply. And more importantly, that they all take place at the same time. Climate change, the war in Ukraine and the Middle East, or the COVID-19 pandemic, and all the resulting economic instability and the geopolitical uncertainty. So the fact that all these crises take place or happen at the same time, or at least that's how it feels, I think all this is pretty unique. And in that context, the concept, the word of polycrisis, which I think was first used during the World Economic Forum in Davos. So this word, this concept of polycrisis really captures adequately and very well this situation where we need to handle various crises at the same time. And more importantly, the tremendous challenges that we are facing as a society. So that is really the starting point of our academic program, this acknowledgement of this situation of polycrisis. And starting from this polycrisis environment, we will explore how resilient sports values can help us adjust, adapt, and hopefully succeed in the face of this polycrisis.
So there are lots of crises. That's a bit of a downer.
That's a lot.
So Michelle will... Michelle, it's your turn to pick us up. We're going to discuss the solutions that will be discovered and offered at the Paris conference. I understand the conference in Paris is built on two tracks, resilience and sport. Is there a connection between these two themes? In other words, is there a common thread that ties the whole conference together?
Yes, absolutely, Larry. And I know Timothée as a very optimistic person, so I don't think it's his goal to drive us down. Especially, we are going to look for a lot of solutions together with more than 400 delegates, which makes us a sold-out healthier conference for the first time in the history of AIJA. But with regard to your question, I think resilience and sport naturally connect. True sportsmanship and true sportsmen, they are resilient in their training day-to-day, in their dietary requirements, in their competition. And of course, sport industry is becoming bigger and bigger. It's becoming a sport entertainment industry, accounting to more than 500 billion euro turnover, and in 3 years' time, more than 600 billion euro turnover. So that's a big becoming a big industry.
Lawyers are always good at following the money, so I see a business opportunity.
Absolutely. And what I look in AIJA as well is to discover new business ideas, to present business plans. And well, there is a lot of work for young lawyers to do there. Especially, for instance, we will have a deep dive into the magic world of esports. Well, upon preparing a surprisingly becoming a big industry.
They could fill stadiums to watch people play video games. It really struck me when I've seen that. Wow.
It's incredible. And it reminds me now, once in a while, that I'm not so young anymore. Because...
I don't think they have like Pac-Man or something as one of those esports.
No, well, I know still some newer games than Pac-Man, but...
You're ahead of me then.
But it's true that upon picking the news, I saw these filled stadiums. There was one in Antwerp, a big tournament. Well, the prize money in those tournaments is huge. The biggest prize money awarded in 2021 was $40 million, while in a Grand Slam in tennis, there was a total prize money of $76 million. So, I mean, this is almost the same prize money as a big Grand Slam tennis, a sport that, I don't know, exists for 150 years. So it going back again on the money, okay, money is a parameter, of course, in the world. It means a lot. And we will have the luck to welcome two industry speakers here, a legal counsel of Vitality, which is one of the biggest esports teams. She already told us that, like for football market, football clubs, there is also a transfer deadline and a transfer market to transfer esports athletes. So they are negotiating to have a good player from one to the other team, which is, well, just like in football. And they have two lawyers in their esports team to tell something that there is a lot of things to do.
And next thing you know, it might become an Olympic sport.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thomas Bach, not later than the 14th of October, during the IOC session in India, he told that he would investigate to do an Olympics on esports because, well, there are market studies that say that more than 500 million people are playing esports and the majority of them are under 34. That means, again, that's why we, well, I didn't know this evolution was there because I'm have turned 39. But even Thomas Bach just 2 weeks ago was talking about this. And of course, there was a lot of enthusiasm in the panelists. Well, it came at the right time and people will even be more interested.
Timothée, can you explain what it actually means when we talk about the law or the legal profession becoming more resilient?
Well, Larry, that's actually what we'll be discussing and exploring during the first track of the academic program through five different panels. Each panel, that's how we structured this track, each panel will deep dive into one of the main crises, one of the main challenges of our time that I described earlier, and see how the law or us as legal professionals, we can adapt and become more resilient. So I'll just take a couple of examples. We have one panel, for instance, which look at how the world has shifted to becoming a more closed business environment. I remember hearing Margrethe Vestager last year. She's a Danish commissioner at the European Commission. And she said that we changed era. We moved from an era of free trade and globalization to another era, another world, which is much more fragmented. And she said that these words, that we switch off the lights behind us and that we're not going back. So, you know, we're really going to a new world, to a new environment.
So that's the idea of nearshoring, in other words, not having global supply chains necessarily.
Exactly, nearshoring. And you know, this new globalization where jurisdictions all over the world are now, you know, imposing new regulations, are building up new walls and new barriers to trade to be more protected, you know, inside their blocks. And we could see this new wave of regulation all over the world, sanctions, trade, FDI, taxation, competition law, data privacy, all over the world. So we will look at these new regulations, these new red tape, but, you know, these new regulations for these countries to become more resilient. We will look at this issue, asking the question, is it too much? Are these countries overreaching? Are they overreacting? Is this overregulation or is it really something which is necessary and adequate? So that will be one way to look at law and resilience. There will be another panel as well looking at climate change. I mean, in my humble opinion, probably the one and only challenge of our time, climate change. And we look at it through the lens of the millennial generation, even younger than the Asia members. This new generation is quickly adopting car sharing as a mainstream transportation solution and prefers car access over car ownership, mainly due to environmental concerns. They don't want to own a car anymore. These, you know, dirty old cars. They want something different. They want a car as a service and hopefully a car which is clean. And that means a massive challenge for the car industry, for the automotive industry, both major players in our economies. And this sector of the economy must really, you know, change gears quickly to remain resilient, to adapt to these new demand, and cope with these very fast changing consumer behaviors and consumer patterns.
I imagine you'll talk about electric vehicles. Would there also be something on self-driving cars?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. All these new environment around transportation and car transportation in particular, because it's, you know, it's a climate change related issue and it has major impact on business and the law in general. Let me take one last example to, you know, to illustrate and to show how the law and or lawyers can become or should become more resilient is the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, I'm just stating the obvious, but the pharma industry had to face immense challenges during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now we need to see whether lessons have been learned from the industry and what it means in case, you know, we need to face future pandemics. So there will be a discussion, there will be a panel dedicated to these post-pandemic issues, such as access to innovation and equitable access to medicines, for instance, through patent waivers or compulsory licensing. This is a very, very hot debate at the moment in the big pharma industry. And more generally, as I said, how can the pharmaceutical industry become more resilient and prepare for any future pandemic? So these, you know, are very concrete issues, very concrete legal issues. That requires the law or the legal profession or lawyers to become more resilient. So that will be really the focus on the first track.
So the resilience really in face of all these crises. So before you brought us down, but now you're telling us how at the conference we're going to find those solutions.
Exactly. There is light at the end of the tunnel, always.
That's very optimistic. Michelle, can you explain the concept of resilience in the context of the legal profession and how it relates to the values instilled through sports?
If you ask me about what sports and resilience has to do with profession, AIJA lawyers, they are not doing commodity work. We are specialized lawyers who treat specific and novel cases. The last time in The Hague, we had a Swiss lawyer who was assisting Caster Semenya, the athlete with a transgender history in sport. But a lot of AIJA lawyers are defending principal cases.
These are not cookie cutter cases. They're each is unique.
Absolutely. In Dutch, we say it are not Huisten and Keukenzaken. So it are not house, kitchen, or yard cases. So it's not the everyday case. And well, since it's not commodity, every case of okay, we have our own practice and we know what we are doing. Every case and complex litigation or complex deals have its own challenges and surprises. And well, like you would say maybe in English, it ain't over until the fat lady sings. So we always need to bear in mind that we will always have adversities or clients that change strategies. Last time I had a shareholdership who was not agreeing on the strategy. So it's like having setbacks as a sportman, you have setbacks in cases, and the one who perseveres, and often sometimes with some late night working, perseveres. And so that's I think the connecting dot between a sportmanship and a good lawyer who is engaged into his practice and for his clients.
So as lawyers, we really have to learn to roll with the punches. Now, Michelle, let me continue. Many athletes face intense pressure and adversity, which can be similar to the demands of the legal profession. Could you share any personal or professional stories where resilience, inspired by the values you learned through sports, has played a crucial role in overcoming obstacles for you?
Since I have two young kids, my main sport is to run behind them. And I must say they are 4 and 6 and they're getting stronger and stronger. So it's the time for me again to do some more sports, or they will outrule me in every sport we do. But I use often here lately a metaphor for trainees to explain the roller coaster, sometimes what a complex proceeding can be with a 3,000 meter steeplechase. You know, the
where you're jumping over those barriers, that sport.
Where you're jumping, I there are 28 barriers, I think, within those water jumps, and there is nothing for granted. And you need to bear in mind that if you didn't pass all these hurdles, then maybe you didn't look any further, and you should always anticipate. Now, about getting wet into the steeplechase, we can maybe talk about that we have the privilege to host Alain Bernard, who is not a steeplechase runner, but a swimmer. He will be our keynote during the opening ceremony. For those who don't know him, he was a double gold Olympic medal winner. So we did already some preparatory talks with him, and well, he told us that he was a talent, but not the biggest. Perseverance brought him to these medals, and I think he will talk about it. During the Olympic Games of 2008, he took the world record, but 3 minutes later, his opponent, Eamon Sullivan, took the world record again on the 100 meters.
So he only held it for 3 minutes.
He held it for 3 minutes in the series, and he knew that the day after, they were competing for the gold medal. although he was not strictly the fastest anymore, only for 3 minutes. But the day after he won, there was not a new world record, but he won from the that time world record holder. So I think if we can learn lessons on resilience and all these emotions in a short time period, this will be very inspiring how he coped with that mixture of emotions.
So it's really the perfect inspirational story to kick off the conference. Timothy, in this era of polycrisis, how can the legal profession contribute to addressing broader social issues and promoting human values?
That's the question we ask ourselves, Larry, and that's the question we try to address during this conference. There will be one panel, there will be one session dedicated to that specific issue. I think we all agree that we've been absorbing a lot of shocks and, again, crises over the last 2-3 years. This has created a lot of anxiety, fear, tension. I mean, on us, among us, it's as lawyers or as individuals. All these crises have clearly, you know, had a bearing on how lawyers and clients behave when faced with their own personal crisis. So starting from that situation, this session will explore whether we can do better. We can do better for our clients, for our fellow professionals, and for ourselves to ensure that we and our clients stay resilient. To do that, we will draw on recent reports that look at why language matters, in particular in a litigation context. You can have a very aggressive strategy in proceedings, in litigation, trying to remain human and decent and show respect and consideration to your fellow professionals and to your clients. So that will be one aspect. We will also focus on new ways of what's called conscious lawyering, which is a way of working which promotes that lawyers do not merely focus on the legal aspect, but also the human element of resolving conflict. So that will be, I think, one of the very fascinating and super interesting panel, again, to see how as lawyers, but also as individuals, you know, we can be more resilient and promote these human values.
So a lot of focus on soft skills in that case.
Exactly, exactly. And it was a very important aspect for us to be able to, you know, to mingle and combine this discussion around soft skills and, you know, at the same time, very substantive and very concrete discussion and brainstorming on key legal issues.
And we're up against the clock, so just one last question. Michel, the AIJA half-year conference in Paris ends on a Saturday with a plenary session in La Maison du Barreau, and the topic is resilience in the face of adversity. What's that session all about?
Well, the session is about a topic that when we chose to do it was not so on the front page of the newspapers, and unfortunately it is there again. It's about radicalized persons eventually committing then terrorist attacks, and we know that also with the whole context of the war in the Middle East and the recent attacks in Arras in France and in Brussels. It's unfortunately again on the paper, and it will be an inspirational session to understand how terrorists come to those acts and radicalize. And we will try to look at it from different angles. We are fortunate to have Sébastien Bellin, who was a professional basketball player, and he was hit in the terrorist attacks in Brussels. He will explain us his four pillars, how he coped with what happened. And he went even through excusing the terrorists, because for him it was the only way to move forward. And we will also have a psychologist from the Ministry of Justice of France, who is on a day-to-day basis working with radicalized persons. She more talks about désengagement, so not radicalized, but désengagement.
Disengaging, I guess. It's sort of the opposite of radicalization, de-radicalizing the people, I guess.
Yeah, because we need to understand, a great French philosopher, Michel Foucault, he read the story of the abnormal persons. Instead of moving them into psychiatric houses, it's important that we need to know why persons that were born as a baby and grown up in sometimes just countries like France and Belgium, why they commit those acts instead of moving them just away as crazy persons, because that's the only thing reason why we will understand and try to make the world better. It may sound a bit sweet what I'm telling, but the aim of the Saturday conference is to look further than our daily practice, and it's the second time we will do it outside of the hotel premises in The Hague. It was in the Peace Palace of the International Court of Justice,
which I think is a beautiful building. It's sort of a classic architecture.
Yeah.
Look, we're out of time. We're out of town. We're all in different towns, actually. As we approach the end of the episode, maybe we could recap. Guys, what are your three takeaways from our discussion?
Well, I would need four, but don't worry, Larry, they will be really short. Why do I need four? We all know the Olympic motto in Latin, Situs Altius Fortius. But since 2021, there is a new adjective to it. So now the Olympic motto is let's become faster, higher, stronger, and together. And I would say to all listeners and possible future IJA members, we will together thrive. We will together be inspired. And at first, we will do that in Paris during our healthier conference.
And Timothy, what are your three takeaways?
My three takeaways, well, I only have three takeaways, actually, so I will be much much shorter, I guess, than my friend Michel. I think my first takeaway will be that we need resilience. I think it's not a buzzword. I think it's a true concept. It's a multifaceted concept, but we need to be resilient because that's one of the tools we have, again, to navigate these crises and hopefully succeed. My second takeaway, and I think that's what you said earlier, is that we said earlier that there is hope. I think there is always hope. And I think this event in Paris will be a great opportunity for lawyers, Asia members, to connect, listen to each other, brainstorm together, and see that there is hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And can I quote you, actually, Larry? The last and the third takeaway would be what you said earlier, Audrey Hepburn, Paris is always a good idea.
Well, that's great. Michel Sehers, Timothée Giard, je vous remercie tous les deux. Thank you both for sharing your insights with us. Good luck with the AIJA Half Year November Conference, and that which takes place just in the coming days in Paris.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Larry. And again, thank you very much for having us.
It's my pleasure. It's been great. This has been episode 1 of season 4 of Spotlight AIJA. As our season progresses, we'll continue to explore the themes and programs of upcoming major AIJA events, including the May half-year conference in Mexico and next summer's annual congress in Madrid. We'll also speak about diversity and inclusion, human rights, and sustainability topics relating to the legal profession. You've been listening to Spotlight AIJA, a podcast produced by AIJA for young lawyers across the globe. If you like what you've heard and wish to be notified of future episodes, follow AIJA on the platform formerly known as Twitter, like us on Facebook, and connect with us on LinkedIn, or you can simply download Spotlight AIJA wherever you find your favorite podcasts or at AIJA.org. For all of us at l'Association Internationale des Jeunes Avocats, this is Larry Markowitz wishing you a great day. Je vous souhaite tous et toutes une excellente journée. Au revoir.